in the dying embers of human existence as the asteroid, a behemoth the size of Texas, hurtles relentlessly toward Earth. The world braces for an apocalyptic end. Deep beneath the bunker, a refuge plunges into the bowels of the Earth. Here the Chosen gather, their purpose clear, to preserve the very soul of our civilization. The 35 and 70 millimeter prints that encapsulate the magic, the emotion, and the dreams of generations past. These masterpieces, each frame a testament to the human spirit, are carefully cataloged and cradled in the cavernous confines of the bunker. Perhaps there was room for more. For friends and family yearning for salvation, but sacrifices must be made. The Moving Earth stand united, the keepers of a flame, promising a future where the art of storytelling endures, transcending the boundaries of time and space. God help us all.
Welcome to Back to the Framerate, part of the Westin Media Podcast Network. Back to the Framerate, where we watch and discuss films on VOD and streaming platforms for your entertainment. Join us as we watch and discuss films, as we are deliberating on whether each one is worthy of salvation or destined for destruction in the face of the impending asteroid apocalypse. I am Nathan Shore, and accompanying me are the extraordinary movie mavens Brianna Butterworth, Ellie Escobar, and Sam Cole. And my first question to all of you, my amazing co-host, who among us is the alpha?
B, why don't you answer that question?
Oh, gee, it's you, Ellie. All day. All day.
Sam?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Nathan, who's the alpha?
I'm asking you guys. I mean, I think, like, as Sam, you've mentioned, this is a communist podcast. So we are all, it's socialist. We are all of equal standing here, right?
Yes, we are.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. No one's the alpha. We're all alphas.
Exactly.
Well, I'm the omega, so it's fine. It's fine.
But today we are still in our winter survival series of films, and I think we've got a real treat that we watched this week, at least in my opinion. We watched 2012's The Gray, starring Liam Neeson, directed by Joe Carnahan. It's been a long day.
So The Gray was released in January of 2012. I remember when it came out in theaters. Like you said, directed by Joe Carnahan, who actually also directed Smokin' Aces and 2010's The A-Team. Mentioning The A-Team that Bradley Cooper was in, Bradley Cooper was actually cast in this movie first. And I can't quite remember the complications, but he was replaced by Liam Neeson, which, I mean, I love Bradley Cooper, but in my opinion, that added a lot of, changed the tone of the movie.
100%.
Probably better for me, given that Liam Neeson, you know, gritty gravitas. And I actually didn't know this, that this is what, I hadn't seen it in several years, and watching it again when it was, you know, the opening credits, I saw Scott Free Productions, their, you know, logo, where that kind of like animated crow birds,
yeah,
that guy, and flies off. And I didn't realize that it was a Ridley Scott and Tony Scott production. Tony Scott is actually credited as the executive producer, and which is just fascinating to me, because this was before, you know, Tony Scott tragically passed away. So I thought that was really interesting. For me personally, I was thrilled to find out that this movie shot mostly in Vancouver and British Columbia, because with this YouTube show that I do called Walks of World, I'd actually spent a lot of time there the past two autumns. And I remember seeing this movie in 2012, thinking how exotic the snowy and the dark landscape looked, and seeing it again this time, it, some shots literally reminded me of footage that I'd shot. So it was a cool feeling to be like, oh my God, I've actually been to these places now, not up to the heights and the mountains that, you know, they probably helicoptered up to, but like those shots of opening tree lines in the snow where you just hear wolves. There's so many areas like that. It was just fascinating that that's where they shot it, because I had no idea. And let's see here. So here's five facts from Yahoo. Says the wolves were made using rained live animals, acrobats in wolf suits, and huge puppet heads operated by three or four people at a time. Definitely know what those shots were. All these famously using CGI. The actors ate wolf stew to get in the zone, which is interesting. But
wolf stew?
Yeah.
Some financial information distributed by Open Road Films and did well. I mean, the budget was $25 million, and that is in my opinion, a high value. $25 million is a low budget, and the production value really shows on the screen. Like, the movie looks good to me. Mm. Opening weekend in the U.S., just above $19 million, and lifetime worldwide gross was $79,781,695. So I assume it made its money back, did decently well. Not sure what marketing costs were, but yeah, that's kind of an overview. But to Gray,
that's thank you, Sam. Yeah, and this, I think, I don't know if you mentioned this, came out, I think, January 27th of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing it back
in the theater back then, actually.
12 years ago, almost exactly to this day, yeah.
Dude, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Happy anniversary, The Grave.
Yeah. In some ways, it feels like, oh my God, has it been 12 years? And then in other ways, it's like, yeah, that feels like 12 years ago.
Yeah, there was a few years in there that felt like 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
And cinematography, I don't know if you mentioned Masanobu Takayanagi.
This may not be right, but I think, if I remember correctly, I think he might have, I don't know if he shot John Adams as well with Paul Giamatti. That might not be accurate. I might be thinking of someone else, so I apologize for that. Correct, but
I really love the cast in this. I'm not getting into my thoughts on this yet, but we have Liam Neeson, Frank Grillo as Diaz, Dermot Mulroney, Joe Anderson, Dallas Roberts, one of my actual favorite character actors. Every time he pops up, I one of those recognizable faces you see all the time. Nonzo Anazi and Ben Bray, I think, are the main cast of this film. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. So I have a trailer I'll also play here. So hang on one second. I'll start this.
A job at the end of the world. There's not a second goes by when I'm not thinking of you.
Going home, guys. What's going on?
Nobody's gonna find us. Not here. We figure out one way south and we start walking.
This will be one of those wild stories you tell at a party.
What is that?
Don't move. Stare right back at him. If we can get to that tree line, we can better defend ourselves.
Go! Go!
You gotta be kidding.
There's a clip from the trailer of The Gray. So we're going to get into our thoughts on this film. After our thoughts, we're going to share our rating, and then we are going to decide whether The Gray is a film that we are going to save, take with us into our vault to preserve forever, or if it's going to be purged out into the fiery asteroid apocalypse. I think we're going to start with Ellie for this week. Ellie, please share us your thoughts on The Gray.
Well, I thought I've seen this film before, and I have not seen this film before. I was getting it confused with another Liam Neeson film, In the Eyes. And having watched the Society of the Snow, and then I had no idea this was about a plane crash. By the way, I was like, what the hell? Another plane crash? I want to get on the plane.
I know.
So
we're going to take a break from plane crash movies for a while.
Really? Yeah. And I'm just thinking like that. It's almost like these two movies open up with the plane crash right away, you know? And so it's like, okay, hello. And it's very manly, right? Like, the film is very masculine, like this one, The Gray. And so I love Liam. It's one of my favorite actors out there. And I loved, so I sat through this film and I was freezing. Like, I'm watching this movie and I think, like, I'm freezing. I'm drinking. I went to make some coffee and then I went to go grab something to eat because I was, like, getting hungry. I was getting hungry watching the movie and then I was getting cold watching the movie. And then the wolves come out and my dog, it's half Chow Chow and Husky, starts to get into the movie as well. Because when the wolves start howling, but they're not real wolves, are they? So my dog totally got it right away. Because she was like, she hears the fierce wolf, you know, ow! And she lifts her head up and she's like, no, that's not a wolf. Because we think she's part wolf too. So when she does hear a wolf, she actually goes, ow, too, right? She howls. So I loved the film. I enjoyed every part of it. I love the... You know, I wanted to feel like with the other film, The Snow, Society of the Snow, I actually cried and I felt emotional, but I didn't feel emotion with this film. I didn't. I just was like, I felt other things. Like I was feeling cold. I felt like I was there in the cold with them. The wolves didn't really scare me, but I loved it. It was entertaining for me. I didn't feel bad for the characters. Like when they died, it was like, okay, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I was just like, oh, okay, that dude died. Okay, another dude dies. Okay. It was kind of gruesome the way they died with the wolf eating them. Do wolves even eat people? Do they? They don't.
I think they took a lot of liberties and I didn't really look much into this, but you know that the Humane Society and PETA like absolutely lost their shit over this movie. And
if anything, I felt bad for the wolf, even though they were not really a wolf. I'm feeling bad for the wolf more than I feel bad for the humans, which is really weird. But I just, you know, it's just a bunch of men, hardworking men. They have families and they're just going to work. But I think for me, it lacked the emotion. Even Liam was just, there's a lot of macho male testosterone in this film. Mm-hmm. And I didn't connect to it. I don't know. Maybe it's just me being me, but I always like to find something to connect with. And even the spaces where the wife will come in and, you know, she'll say, don't be afraid. I didn't even feel it. Like, okay, so she died. And yeah, so it was, I liked it. It doesn't top The Society of the Snow for me.
I think I had a better experience with this film than Ellie. I think this is an incredible film. In many ways, I think this has no right to be this good, though. On paper, this appears to be a low-budget action-adventure vehicle for Liam Neeson. But what this film isn't is just another entry into the Liam Neeson oeuvre of action film. The Gray is wrestling with themes of mortality, fear, belief in God versus atheism or agnosticism. And none of these in a superficial way. It's all clearly, cleverly disguised in I think a very intense story. The movie is almost unclassifiable in one particular genre. It's not really an action movie because it's very talky in a lot of ways. And it's going it's probably going to wear out its welcome if you're looking for a Liam Neeson action film like the ones he's been known for in the last 10 years or so. And for an adventure film, I think it's good. But damn, it's a really dark movie. It's not really fun in that way. And there are definitely some gory and horror elements to this, but it's by no means a horror film. It's not super scary. So it's really an existential drama about our mortality. And honestly, I'm in awe that this movie even exists. These types of movies are rarely made anymore, but this film I just find to be a treasure. And I do hope, and I do think that it's gaining notoriety as time marches on because I think this is a very underrated film. I love this. I think this movie is just so unique. And that's all I'm going to say for right now, but I love it. I absolutely love it. So I'm going to save more thoughts on it after, but let's.
So I enjoyed it a lot. I'm with you, Ellie, in the sense that I think Society of the Snow is definitely the superior film. Me personally, I grew up on like sort of 1990s, very like testosterone-y action movies. And so the testosterone element for me is amusing. And I wouldn't say I relate to all the characters, but I always enjoy seeing tense situations of characters that don't like each other that much. And because they're all like at each other's throats. And so that adds for a lot of drama and tension. I also agree with what Nathan said. I think the script does a really good job, because sometimes with the issues of, you know, is there God? Is there no God? What happens after you die? Sometimes the movie almost steers into pontificating, or you think, oh God, this is going to get a little pretentious. And then it perfectly pulls back at the right moment with a funny line or a joke. And so it gets those themes in, but without hitting you over the head. And so I think it does that pretty well. I will say, for me, and though it wasn't a huge detraction, I thought there were way too many of Liam Neeson's dream sequences and cutaways to his wife. I thought that worked effectively a few times. Sometimes it felt a little sentimental, or sometimes when he's remembering his father and what he wrote on the wall, I almost would have been happy just to hear Liam Neeson talk about it and have a push-in shot on him instead of cut away to this kind of maudlin sepia tone. Like the flashbacks were just a little bit of a cheesy device for me. Again, some of them were effective. I just thought there were too many of them. But other than that, I mean, I like it because I thought it had a good sense of visual geography. I liked that they had to escape. They had to get to the trees. They go off the cliff. I thought their survival, I wouldn't, you know, I didn't feel emotional. I wasn't sad when I lost him, but I was entertained in the sense that I was curious to see what happened, who made it, who was going to get through. It was just kind of a good thriller. And that, you know, that kind of jerk that's talking to Liam Neeson on the plane at the beginning, and he's like, I just want to sit by myself. You just know that guy is going to die soon. And you're like, man, this guy's not getting through this movie. Like,
that's Joe Anderson, who plays Flannery. Yeah.
In terms of plane crashes, interestingly enough, I think the best like plane crashes I've ever seen in film is probably, they're both Robert Zemeckis films. It's Castaway and Flight, because what's interesting about the plane crash in this film is I feel that the plane crash in Society of the Snow is more brutal and in some ways better. But this plane crash, of all the plane crashes I've seen in a movie, it disturbs me the most, because there's something so unpleasant about it. It's freezing inside the cabin. The pilots are getting electrocuted. It's just this, the plane crash is really grim in this film. And like it really gives me the creeps, and in a weird way gets more under my skin than some of the other plane crashes. I don't know why, but it has that effect. And I will say lastly that I really like Frank Grillo's performance as Diaz, because he is such like a hothead, and he's so like terrified, and he won't admit it to himself, and he's just off his rocker, but he just seemed like a very realistic, like spazzed out person in that setting. And it was interesting to see personality. So I enjoyed it. I don't know if we're doing the star system, but I would give it a 3, but it's a little better than that. I'd give it a 3.5 because it takes like what Nathan was saying, material that should be standard, and yet the movie finds a way to elevate it enough to make it more than its initial parts. So I enjoyed it. I don't like love it. I'm not blown away by the film, but it's a very entertaining movie. And when I found out that we were going to watch it this month, I was happy about that, because I'd seen it years ago, and it's like it's one of those movies I can watch several times with some years in between, because the adventure always works on me each time, and the situation, it's perilous. Not horror, but not quite. It's hard to define this movie, but that's what I like about it. Yeah. So 3.5 for me.
I'm going to get to B in a second, but I want to just back up and rebut one other thing and back you up on one thing, Sam. The Ellie, you mentioned about like this overly testosterone fueled thing. I think that this is a dissection of that. And you've got the Frank Grillo character here. And I think it's setting him up to be, to peel that away. And that's what I think this movie is also doing. It's, yeah, it's about God and faith and in humanity, but we see that this character who is set up to be this person that says he has no fear. And as this movie goes on, we learn that this guy really is scared as hell. And we are slowly peeling away those layers of him, and that humanity comes through. He is set up as like the antagonist of this movie. But at the end of this, you know, I found myself most connected to the Frank Grillo character than I think anybody. He has the best story arc of anybody in here. So I just wanted to point that out here. I think that this movie has a lot to say about alpha males, and there's a lot going on in this movie. I don't know, but anyways.
That's true. It's analyzing them, but it's showing the character, but it's not like the movie isn't of it in and of itself being like, yeah, look how tough these guys are. It's doing the opposite, where it's like showing their shells coming off.
Yeah.
Because they're terrified. Yeah.
B, let's get to you. Oh, I want to be, you know what? Because Sam, you gave your rating. I will say I gave this a 4.5, because I think this movie is fantastic. Yeah. Solid 4.5. I think this movie is amazing.
I will say really quick, in terms of directing, I'm so sorry, but in terms of directing, we'll get to you.
You know what
sells the opening shot of that movie, where it's just like a snowy, dark hillside and you hear the wolves and it pans through a silent forest. Then there's a hard cut to the petroleum station of like this alien like mechanism society in the middle of nowhere. Boy, does that set the tone, and that's some good directing. Yeah. So sorry, B. I thought.
No, that's fine. I think we need Ellie's star rating.
Yeah, because I would say we've given ours. Ellie, what was yours?
I wanna like this. I like this movie, but not loved it. It left me with so many questions. And I didn't like the end. So I did not like the end. I wanted more. And he left me with like, what? That's the ending? Anyway, it's a 3.
All right.
That's still pretty high, Ellie. I thought you were going to go lower, and I wouldn't have blamed you for it.
I'm going to be fighting for this one. All right, B, what's up?
I'm so looking forward to, do we have more estrogen in next week's episode? Maybe, just a little.
Is the bear female? We'll get to that.
Oh my God.
Definitely not the week after that.
This is, right? This is now a plane crash and dudes rock podcast. I hope you all enjoy.
I think knowing that now, Ellie, your suggestion before we started recording is definitely warranted.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. No, I'm somewhere in between you guys. I really like this. I thought it was very good. I like when movies are genre movies that they don't try to be overly smart. I like when they don't try to be super philosophical or be something that they aren't. I think if you're a genre movie, I often think leaning into being a genre movie really benefits you. And then you're able to imply stuff without having to say it out loud. And I think this movie rides that line really well. I think they're able to like bring in some great allegory. I thought a lot about Moby Dick while I was watching this. Felt like that. Felt a little biblical, right? This allegory for impending death. But it didn't ever wonder what their internal motivation for wanting to live was, right? We didn't, you know, a little bit we talked about the daughter, who do you want to live for? But it wasn't really like Liam Neeson's wife was gone. It was just the desire to live, kind of like an animal. So I appreciated that for the most part. I did like the ending. Sorry, Ellie. I thought the ending was really good.
I agree. Drives a fine line too. I love what you're saying, because I just want to comment, this movie, if it just steered to the left or right, it could have gone
way wrong.
Liam Neeson was like, come on, God, talk to me. And all of a sudden, like, lightning came down and struck and knocked out.
It's so bad.
Like, come on, man. But it doesn't. It veers close. And you're like, please don't. But then it stays the course. And you're like, good.
And around the campfire, they do talk about, like, what is their motivation. But they're not like, you don't see flashbacks for everyone, right? Mm-hmm. You don't see. Right. You know, and like, it kicks right back into the action. So I think like having that backbone, or that like architecture of it being a genre movie, really helped it avoid getting too maudlin. And I think, Sam, what you were saying about the flashbacks, I think the score really undercut those. I think it just got so sappy.
Yeah.
And it was like such a weird tonal shift. I was like not super on board, but I will say the flashback in the beginning with the plane crash where you see the wife suddenly like sucked out of bed and it's the merging of dream and reality. Mm-hmm. I thought, wow, that more filmmaking like that. Like
that was a good one. See, I like that one. Cool. There's so many times when she was like, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Mm-hmm. And I was like, got it.
Also, at some point you're telling me not to be afraid. I'm a little afraid. Worse. But yeah, I thought it was really cool. I don't know that it's like super successful in breaking down masculinity. I don't know that like masculinity doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? It exists because of the women around it. So when you don't have women in the picture, how much of a full picture are you really getting? I don't know. I don't think it needs to, though. That doesn't take away from it for me. It is what it is. Yeah, so I liked it. I was going to give it a 3.5. I'm on board.
And one thing I was going to say, I like visual geography is really important in movies to me, like with the shots or the choice where you get a sense of. And I thought this movie was really good at their route. Like, I feel like I could draw a fake map of like the plane and the woods they went to, and they went down the slope and there was the cliff and the river and they took the river east because they like I could feel a like 3D like GPS map in my head, and I like that in movies. And this is a totally random comment, but I'll say that Steven Spielberg for me is like the master of visual geography. Yeah. Way off top, I'm gonna stop, but like random comment, Indiana Jones films, every single one of those movies I feel like I could, if I was plopped in the Temple of Doom or something like that, I could find my way around the place because of the shots and the manner in which it was shown, and that kind of technical visual geography stuff matters to me. And so this movie has nothing to do with that, but I thought it was solid at I was always like aware of where they were going, what they were trying to do. Like, it didn't get muddy for me, and that was a big like plus points for me.
I wonder if it's because of like the grueling like filming on location that they did in those conditions, and just like finding ways to make it work and make their equipment work and sort of not leave set to set to get more comfortable.
They just have to be like economical. They're like, okay, the insert shot of the tree line, reverse gun, okay, here comes the storm. Like, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Great, good movie.
Yeah. So I have a couple other.
No, I'm not putting it down. I think it was great.
It would be. I could understand not liking this one, Ellie. I can.
No, I didn't not like it. I liked it. I wish there was, having watched the other film before this one, where I got so emotional and I actually cried and I connected to every character in that film. I didn't connect to any of the characters in this film.
No, it's hard to, you know, it's like the life of an oil driller, you know, like shooting wolves, like, you know, getting drunk all the time. Like, it's not, it's like, you know, I mean, though I don't relate to the characters, what I liked, and I didn't feel emotional at all, but what Nathan was saying is like, I kind of enjoyed in a weird way the darkness of this movie, because it is so dark. And literally, it's a movie like without hope in it. Like, there's no hope. Like, it's like there's no, oh, we're gonna make it. It's like no. Worse. Death. Like,
there's only one moment in the whole movie where they kind of give you a sense that they could be on the right route, where like Liam Neeson discovers like where there's been some trees that have been cut down, and like, oh, there's some civilization that could be nearby. And they hear the water. So it was like, that's the only moment I think in the entire movie where I listened to the director's commentary, and they said that they had to give them like 30 seconds where there was like an uplifting moment where they feel the characters felt like, ah, a relief. Like, we're going in the right direction. And that's it. That's the only time in the entire movie where they're like, oh, we're going the right way. So, but yeah, the entire movie, it's like, it's just like worse.
I will say, one of the cuts that I thought was amusing but downright sadistic was when, I'm just looking at the notes, so I'm terrible at characters' names, but when, who is the guy that, oh yeah, when Dermot Talgett. Mulroney as Talgett, when he like had just an awful, like rough death, like hitting everything up here, and then he lands, and then it's like a little twisted on the filmmaker's part where it's like his daughter's leaning over him to embrace him. No, it's the wolf. And you're just like,
oh. Hey, by the way, when that whole sequence goes down, that was some incredible sound design as he is hitting. You can feel that every single back-breaking branch on the way down, the crackling, the pine needles bristling. I love
that. Yeah, that was great. That was great. Yeah. That was a great sound.
They did really well too, with their budget, with like doing, like, you could tell some moments were CG, but they were well, like, they blended it into the look of the, like, they use their, I just feel like that movie, on screen at least, it really came across that it used its budget well. Like, they're clever. Yeah.
But to go back, I mean, that's a great, I think this is where I think the movie elevates, because that scene where he sees his daughter, it's an awesome callback to a moment earlier in the movie where Liam Neeson's like consoling one of the people that is dying on in the wreckage, and I captured this scene, and I actually want to play it for the listeners here because I think it's an incredible moment.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It's awesome.
Here, I do know.
So listen to this, everyone. Yeah. Here we go.
You're gonna die. That's what's happening. It's all right. It's all right. Look at me. Keep looking at me. It's all right. It'll slide over you. It'll start to feel warm. Nice and warm. Let it move over you. It's all right. Let your thoughts go. All the good things. All the good things. Yeah? Who do you love? She, your daughter. Let her take it, man.
Like, I kind of want Liam Neeson to be with me when I go now.
I didn't feel.
Sam, you tried your best.
Once again, I did not feel emotional or connection to this. I don't know why. It's just so weird. I mean, like, it's maybe it's because it's Liam.
There's a level of cheesiness to it. There is, but. I bought it. I can't help it. I bought it.
I will say this is, and this is like being nitpicky, but there's one visual effect shot where I like it in theory better than the execution. They see one pair of wolf eyes light up near the plane, and then they see a whole bunch of wolf eyes. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of that shot, but the way, unless there's a slope behind them, it looks like the eyes are like floating.
Does it play like Scooby-Doo?
Yeah. It's like they're too, it's, the eye line for me is too high. If the eyes were lower and the shot was blocked by some of the actors, it would be real, but those eyes are just floating nebulously. It's just the way of the angle of it. Just,
I think that I think there's like supposed to be like some embankment of snow there. That's why they're at all different heights, but I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, but I honestly, I saw that. It's like that moment where I think of like Hanna-Barbera cartoons where like Shaggy and Scooby-Doo are going off and they like, they see like the pair of eyes and all of a sudden there's like 100 of them. It's like,
I thought of like Pee-wee Herman and Pee-wee's Big Adventure when there's a ton of those eyes and he turns on his flashlight and there's creatures around him and he's like, ah!
Yeah. There's definitely some moments where there's some dumb things in this, you know, it's a stretch, but that's why I didn't give it a perfect 5 stars. But did anyone else here see the Alien, the movie Alien connection? I mean, obviously this is a scot-free production. Mm-hmm. Tell me if this plot sounds familiar. 7 blue collar people who work for a large corporation whose mission is to exploit and collect natural resources. When their mission goes awry, they are considered crew expendable as they are hunted down and killed one by one by an unfeeling creature showing no mercy.
Sounds like right on the money. That's honestly, maybe that's why they liked them. They're like, oh, we can do the, you know, there's an Alien connection because it's like really.
Yeah. Scott-free production too.
I never liked Alien. So they,
I love them. But even in so far as an Alien, right? They're not the humans are crashing their planet, you know, the same thing, like in the gray, the humans are in the wild where the wolves are. It's not, invasive.
I'm not going to take credit for noticing this. I did some deep dive research on this, but did anyone notice Dermot Mulroney's cap with a big WY on it? And you can't not think about Wayland Corp when you see that also.
Oh, so, no. Wow, I did not notice.
This could be a prequel to Alien that corporation we work for.
No more Alien movies.
And Joe Carnahan says he cannot deny that that's what the company is that they work for.
By the way, so that I see. I mean, no, I see. It's like the early days of Wayland Yutani.
Yeah, I love that. I love
that's
that.
Actually, you know what? That's actually, if those movies exist in the same universe, I'm all for that. I like it even more now.
I do.
Awesome, man. Like, but I totally random comment. And like, B, like, I do not mean to single you out. I am fascinated for you to see Alien 3 because I just that you will find that movie really interesting because, like, I can understand avoiding it because I'm like, you might think it's not going to be great, but that is a weird, dark, fascinating movie that I just have a feeling that you might like it. And, like, I don't know. Anyway, I'm off topic, but yeah, Alien 3 is.
No, it's
underrated, but
I will watch Aliens.
Watch it right after Aliens, because if you watch Aliens and you go to Alien 3, it's like the biggest downer and getting punched in the face. But like, judging it as a movie on its own right, not as like the third part of the trilogy, if you look at it by itself, it's an interesting movie.
Yeah,
I can see that.
Oh, you're a fan of Alien 3, so am I. You saw it in the theater. I did not, but that's awesome.
I saw it in the theater way back
1992.
So disappointed when I saw it, but now I really do like it. There is a cool foreshadowing moment of dialogue. And this is why I just think this movie is just has a great script and so many great callbacks. Otway, Liam Neeson, is attacked by a wolf, and he jokes that maybe he'll turn into a werewolf. And Flannery thinks he's being serious, but he tries to save face and says something like, well, I didn't think it was actually going to grow claws or anything like that. But at the end of the film, Liam Neeson equips himself with those broken glass nips and tapes knives to his hands, and he technically has his claws, which I just love that. It's such a nice touch. And this is why this movie is so smart. That
so it does things like that.
It's okay, Nathan.
There's other funny lines that I remember. Like, I love it when
I'm going to keep gushing. Ellie, you're not going to stop me.
I know you are.
I love it when Frank, one of my favorite lines in the movie is when Frank Grillo is like, look around, we're in Fuck City, population 5 and dwindling. I was like, all right, I love this movie.
Oh yeah, well, talk about the philosophy of death. I like the part where Dia says, well, I hope this is not my last, you know, I don't want to die because my last fuck was like a prostitute. I was 53 years old. So like, who wants to go? And, you know, because I still have time to, you know, if you say gay. Yeah. So I'm like, what the fuck?
But that's why this, I feel like the screenplay is really good, because if it had just gone into like pontificating and like we're talking about life and death and there's no humor, the movie would have been urge. The comedy lines don't undercut the darkness.
Yeah.
They alleviate it in an amusing manner that makes the movie more fun. And so there's another line that Frank Grillo has when, what's the actor's name? The guy who thought that he was going to turn into a werewolf for real?
Flannery.
When Flannery is like talking around the, like one of the campfires towards the beginning, Frank Grillo is like, man, I wish one of the other guys survived. Or like, it was basically a snub, like, yeah, like, see, oh, all the
I
people
have a problem with this movie. I have a problem with this director because he killed that guy so fast, and he was growing on me. He was one of my favorite characters. And the young guy.
Oh, man. Flannery?
Yeah.
It's so funny you say that. I hate to say this because I hated him. And when he died, I was like, yes.
No, I wanted him. I liked him. I grabbed onto him right away.
That
I was
guy
like,
was a punk.
That's my guy. Yeah, but I was like, that's my guy. I want him to live. Because he's so funny and he's so dumb that I was attracted to that one character. And I, you know, and there was a part where Liam Neeson says, no mas. And I'm thinking, why is he throwing no mas in Espanol in the movie? It's because Diaz has a tattoo that says no mas on his neck. I'm like, oh, duh. So he's like, no mas. I thought he was telling him no more. Like, stop, like, no more. And he actually called him by his tattoo name, No Mas. So I'm like,
I love it. he's got that great line when he's like, hey, you know, in case the plane crashes, don't put your head in the position, because on the Discovery Channel, so, and the other person, why would you even say that? And like, when I was watching the movie too, I was pissed at him as well. I was like, what is your problem, dude? Like, if I'm watching a movie by myself, I fully admit that, like, I will talk at the screen. I'll be like, no, what are you doing? That's the you're cutting the wolf's head off. Come on, man. You were getting cool. Now you're spazzing out again. Oh, what's your problem, Frank? Like,
what I think this movie did well is that they incorporated the humor. And I feel like in real life, humans, when they're going through a survival mode or a tragedy and they're in their darkest moment, someone is bound to say a joke to make you feel less fear and forget for a second that you're in a tough situation. Mm. And I think that was well incorporated in the moments that they had, you know, in those moments where they're like, something funny will be said by one of the characters. And I thought, okay, that's because in real life, I feel like that's how humans behave. And I think for me, that's the one part that they got right.
I think that if the four of us crashed in a plane in that situation, we might actually have a shot at survival, because we would instantly realize that, like, bickering. And so I think it would just become like, okay, all right, guys, like, what are we going to do here? You know what I mean? Like,
if we all crash and all like down on a plane, Nathan is going to take over like Liam Neeson did.
No, I told but you.
Then Ellie is.
I told you if I die first, you can all eat me.
We're not going there. I can't. I will say this movie made my palms so sweaty at certain points. Like,
why?
Oh my God, that scene where they threw the rope to the tree, where they had to get over that cliff. I was like on the edge of my seat. I knew what was coming. I knew not everyone was going to make it. And I still was like, oh my God, that's so high up. Oh my God, that's so scary.
The person that hates heights, I will not make it.
Oh my God. The whole time I was like, that is something I could not do. And then when, you know, you mentioned cutting the wolf's head off, that made me viscerally like cringe. I was like, oh my God, that's so graphic.
That was needlessly like, that was a little sick. You know what I mean? I was like, sadisticness in moments in the movie where it's like,
well, isn't it true that humans in a situation such as that will eventually become barbaric because they want to survive?
Maybe some people, sure.
Yeah.
But
People would, but I guarantee you the four of us wouldn't. I know it sounds weird to say that, but it would not, the barbarism wouldn't happen. We'd be scared.
No.
We might not make it, but
a bunch of men together, I feel like that would happen. They would eventually turn into like wolf themselves. You know?
We turn into wolves ourselves.
I definitely would have quietly stolen all the wallets and the money in it, and like not just like showed it. I just like take all the stuff and be like, oh, I don't know.
We also had wallets in the last movie. I was like, oh my God, is Society of the Snow a real
thing? No, that's a thing that people do, I guess. So you can
thinking
have
about
something.
Wallets. I don't have any pictures in my wallets. Or billfolds. I don't have any pictures in my wallet.
I noticed that. That felt like a narrative device. I was like, who has photos in their wallet?
I mean, in 2011.
My mom, my dad, my ex-husband,
I used to have pictures of my kids in my wallet.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. I used to have pictures in my wallet, but then, you know, as soon as it started filling up with money, I was like, nah.
I was just saying, like,
You are such a goof, Sam.
I used to have a wallet that had pictures in it, but now I feel like wallets that I get now don't come with a place to put photos in it anymore. It used to have the plastic sleeves, and they don't have them anymore. I don't know, but
yeah, life is hard for men. But
I want to get back to that because in this movie, this is a really powerful moment, because in these final moments, you know, Liam Neeson is stacking these wallets up. That scene, you know, Ellie, I know you felt no emotion in this movie at all, but that scene actually really, really wrecked me. And
it touched you.
What's really I thought was really powerful is that these photos of are the real actors in their families. And then we see Diaz, who only has the driver's license, and we see that he had no family, and that really affected
me. I don't think that they're the real actors' family, because then they will have to pay the real actors' families in the movie.
It is the real actors' families and their children. And no, I think it's just a really wonderful bookend, as you know, as we know, they're collecting these wallets and it's building up to something, but we really don't really know what it is. And we never imagine that the emotional impact of the conclusion of it until we see it at the end. And what's really powerful, I thought, is that all these wallets probably will never, nobody will ever find them. They're just likely to remain in that wolf's den, buried in the snow forever until they deteriorate. So it's, I don't know, it really.
That's funny though. If they did find the wallets, but they found the wallets in like an Ernest P. Worrell movie, and it was Jim Varney, and he like finds the wallets, and he's like, "Rimshot, look what I found." Sorry, terrible.
Yeah Sam.
Who's on board? Anybody want to see that in unrelated sequel? Nobody.
Okay. let's get to our final thoughts on this, and if we're going to save this film or purge it into its the fiery apocalypse. Ellie,
that's my drums.
Oh, good.
Pretty good.
And you can share any final thoughts if you want with this and tell us your decision.
Oh man, I don't know. It's not a bad movie. It's just philosophically, it didn't touch me. Emotionally, it didn't touch me. Adventure wise, and the and the dark parts did touch me, but didn't scare me.
Sounds like it did nothing for you then.
She's okay.
It was okay. I was entertained, and it made me want to drink coffee because I felt cold inside because I thought I was in the snow with them. Is that good? Yeah, see? That's a good thing, right? Because they brought me into the scene, right? And I'm like, oh, I feel you, man. I feel you, how cold it must be right now. And I even went outside after the movie just so I could feel the cold. You know what I mean? Listen, I give it a 3. It's good. It's Liam. I love Liam. That's all I can say. Is it going? Do you want me to say to go in the vault?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing?
Oh yeah, no.
No. Okay.
And I tell you why no, because I like movies that teach me something, that leave me with something, and mm-hmm. this one didn't.
Okay. As you know, I love this film. I don't think it's a perfect film at all. I could probably talk about this for another hour because I think there's a lot. I think this movie is wonderful on a lot of levels. I like the fact that there are no heroes or villains in this movie. I mean, even Diaz, who we've talked, I think, more about him than Liam Neeson. I mean, he's initially positioned as an antagonist of this movie, but he is eventually humanized. And I think in a worse movie, he would be the typical bad guy trope, a foil to the group. We didn't talk about this, but where Diaz decides that, you know, all of his injuries have caught up with him, he decides that his journey is over and he is going to, he's pretty much giving up, and he sits down and he's just going to wait it out. And he knows that the wolves are eventually going to get him, and he's going out in his own terms. And he reveals mm-hmm. that his name is John, and then Otway, Liam's character, shakes hands with him and says his name is John. And Dia says, of course.
By the way, John.
And here we have, I think, one of the greatest moments of the movie, where we have the two characters that throughout have been at most odds with each other. But in the end, they share the most common thing with each other. And I think just a great moment. I think this movie is full of moments like this. And I think it's elevated beyond what it should be because of this. And also, this movie is giving the middle finger to the notion of God. They are, so many times, they are about to, like, there's another great moment where they're about to leave the wreckage, and And it's who's the Dallas, what's the actor's name? Henrik. He says, shouldn't we say something to the about these people that died? And he starts to say a prayer and he invokes God. And Liam Neeson looks around and we look with him and all we see is this desolate wasteland. You know, there's no God is essentially what this movie is saying. And again, at the end of the movie, he's looks up at the heavens and he's like screaming for God to give him a sign and nothing happens. And he says, fuck it. I'll do it myself. I just love that we are in this territory of this faith versus atheism, agnosticism, and wrestling with that. I think this movie has so much to say about this. But you know, whether it's effective or not, I think is totally a very subjective thing. I thought it was fascinating.
I thought it was fascinating too, and what I was saying before is I liked that moments of humor really add to it. So when he's saying, you know, God, thank you for sparing us, then he pauses and he's like, oh yeah, and please keep that up, by the way. I was like, yes, that's what I would say.
Is this teaching lessons? No, I find this truly a slice of entertainment. So yeah, that's always a look at it as. I didn't learn anything from this. I'm not a better person after this, but definitely I found this to be a riveting slice of entertainment. So yeah, I want to take it.
I've seen better entertaining movies than this one. So,
I really like this and I would totally watch this again. So yes, I would like to take this movie with us to share with the future generations. Sam.
So, I mean, I definitely enjoyed this movie a lot. I was entertained. A comment on, one second, my computer is just one moment. I'm back. So a quick comment on the Frank Grillo's death scene. I thought it was really effective too. It honestly really surprised me because of all the characters. I was shocked that he gave up, but I understand. I thought you explained that well, Nathan. I surprised myself by saying this, but I would not include this movie in the vault. I liked it. I really enjoy it. Find it entertaining. 3.5 stars. But I just don't think it would make that cut for me personally. So that's what I would say on that.
I did feel a little sad when Diaz died in that manner because I felt sad for him that he wasn't going to FCK again. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that was his stand.
just kind of like, that was it.
That was it. Like, you're done, man.
You know what we forgot to mention in this that is crazy before we get to B? Liam Neeson shot this movie in the beginning of January 2011 in British Columbia. His real-life wife, Natasha Richardson, died in March 2009 in a skiing accident in Canada.
Yep.
2 years before this. Yeah. I can't imagine the emotions that he must have been going through filming a movie like this at the time. I mean, the personal experience, how he probably what he brought personally into this kind of movie, you know, working these conditions about, and as we know, come to find out, it's about a wife that passed away as well. We didn't talk about this in the main review, but I just thought that was something that is worth mentioning.
I saw in an interview that Liam Neeson said that that one of the ways that he tried to cope or deal with the loss of his wife is to stay as busy as possible. And I think he was just like, I'm going to do this movie. I'm going to go out there in the snow. I'm going to do this. I'm going to like.
That's what I was going to say. It's almost like it's therapy for him to do this.
Exactly. And yeah. So as tough as it would be having those themes of like a wife that's passed away in the film, I think at that time I'm just guessing, but that he would prefer to be working even on a movie in harsh, snowy conditions rather than staying home and being like reminded. Oh,
totally. I'm also just considering like the material of this, where it's about mortality and faith in God and
heavy, yeah.
and losing a wife and suicide and like, damn, like that is that to the bone. You know, I'm just thinking like, that's hard, you know.
He's talked about it in interviews about how he like used her memory when he was writing the letter in the film and how he bonded with the other cast over it. It's really interesting.
This is the things that as actors we have to keep in our toolbox.
We have
to keep our real happenings in life in our toolbox so that when we do play a role, we can take them out and use them in that moment. Yeah. So
Definitely, right.
B, we're up to you.
Yeah, I can't believe we didn't talk about that or about Grillo's death scene, because that was, I think, out of all the characters, we come back to him because he had like the most arc, right? He came from being like so angry at the wolf to just so accepting, you know, his five stages sort of happened quicker. Yeah. Henrik's death, was it Henrik the drowning? I thought his death was also really powerful.
Like in a good way.
I have a thought. I want to hear your rating, but I want to get back, circle back to Henrik on in a scene with him and Liam Neeson for a moment, but I'll let you finish your...
Are we thinking about the scene where he tries to get to know Liam Neeson on a little bit more of a personal level?
Yes.
And get, you know, you're here in the snow with this guy who's tried to commit suicide and your life is kind of depending on each other. And I think you want a bond, but that's probably also in the back of your mind.
I'm basically talking about the flashback where he says, hey, remember the last night at camp?
Yeah.
Where you went off, where did you go? And that look in your face reminded me of Diaz. I hated that.
Me too. I hated it. I totally hated it. I thought he was like, it was tacked on. I thought he was prying. And I was like, come on, man. Just like, I did not like that moment. Yeah.
Something about it, just like you said, it felt tacked on. And also it accomplished nothing, because we learn nothing. We already know this information about Otway, and Henrik learns nothing new about it. And then he's taken out moments later. So it was such a throwaway scene that it just like, it did not need to happen. We learned nothing from that. So I don't know. I just, the worst moment of the whole movie for me.
And it was like a weird time for him to bring it up. It's like, well, does it really matter now?
And he says that, like, I guess it doesn't matter now. Like, well, why do we have to stop and do this? Like 3 minutes of nonsense.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was a side note. Anyways,
I didn't hate it as much as you two did. I wonder if this is some dude code that I don't know about. No. But I was thinking,
there's no emotion. Emotion is.
I was like,
no dude code. I love it.
I was like, if I'm stuck alone in the snow and this might be the last person I'm ever alive with, like, I got to know some stuff. Tell me some stuff about you. And then I thought, no, I'm going to finish. I thought maybe it served a little bit to show how Liam Neeson had gotten past being suicidal by actually having to confront death. And I thought, like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't feel that at all. As long as I can chop firewood and carry his weight, like, I don't give a fuck about him. And I'm sorry, but like, I don't need to know anyone I'm surviving with. They just better.
Okay, you two feel more strongly about this than I do. I didn't think it was that horrible.
I'm not with him. If that's what the purpose, if that's what it actually did be, I'm for that. If it's revealing something, a character trait, but it didn't do that for me. It just revealed nothing.
Exactly. The guy just chastised him. He's like, remember at the beginning of the movie when you tried to kill yourself? That was wrong. It's like, oh, well, did I not help you survive the wolves? Like, does that not count? You got to fucking chastise me for something. They're like, go fucking drown yourself in the water, you fuck.
All right.
Yes. Sorry.
My question is, did he follow him that night? Because he did ask him.
I think he did follow him, but then
Liam says, did you follow me? Did you follow me? And he doesn't answer because I think he's scared to answer at that point, to tell him, yeah, I followed you. I knew what you were going to do. But, you know, what's the point of that scene? The point of that scene, in my opinion.
But see, there was also a religious element because God punished him for that scene by drowning him. God. That's a joke. That is a joke. Peter Griffin here. That's a joke.
Peter Griffin.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just thought, yeah, I didn't think it was that bad. I also think a lot of the flashbacks were egregious, so why we had to see the exact same shots of Liam Neeson, I was like, oh, okay.
Maybe they were just fillers.
I know what you mean. Like, I understand what that scene could have been, like getting to know someone. It's just the way I'm talking more
about it. Well, then he does die like 2 seconds later. I get it. But I'm
not. Delivered in the scene, it just felt like he was like, hey. Why did you do that?
I didn't get that at all.
Maybe he just needed to know that before he died.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, like, if I'm... Yeah, I mean, I would want to know, I guess. I would want to know. And also, like, you're the only two left, right? Like, what are you hiding from each other at that point, right? You're in the exposed wilderness. Mm. I don't know.
But what if they survive? He wouldn't want him to know that he was about to commit suicide.
Exactly, yeah. The situation might improve, so there's no reason to go all, like, Oprah, you know?
You're right. It's either totally clammed up or Oprah. Those are our two speeds here. No, I would not put this in the vault. No.
Okay. Then this. It's gone. Wiped from existence.
I feel. I'm not gonna lie. I feel a little sad for it, but I did not. Yeah. Didn't feel strongly enough to put it into the vault.
And
it,
we gotta be picky with our films, you know.
We gotta be cutthroat, you know.
Yeah. Honestly.
Now there's room for Ernest Saves Christmas.
Yes.
Gremlins. Oh,
Ernest goes to camp is better. Gremlins 2 would make for an entertaining review, because I think that you might surprisingly like it a lot, Nathan. I would just be fascinated. I think
we should just add all the Saw films.
All of them. It's one movie.
It's one movie.
That's something really random and dry and like like
English Patient.
No, I love that
movie. I love that movie. Cider, what are you House talking rules. About? That would be Cider at the Gromez.
I like the Cider House Rules.
If we review The English Patient, that would make the vault in a second.
Me That's too. I'm with Sam.
I've never seen it.
The English Patient will have to make it into the vault. It's a movie I can watch over and over and over again.
Yes. The English Patient, Ellie. Huh? It's up to me and 1998.
I remember hearing about The English Patient going, wow, that's a grown-up movie. And then I never watched it.
It wouldn't be such a grown-up movie now, though, B.
No, not now. That's right. I've just never seen it.
There's a plane in there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Another plane crash.
Our track record.
Plane crash February.
Oh, boy.
Let's be honest. Peter, I can't do it.
Oh, God.
I'm so glad I didn't do that. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, we're going to wrap it up there. But, you know, let me just mention a few housekeeping notes. I would just like to thank each of you for tuning into our show. Your feedback would be greatly appreciated. So if you agree or disagree with our opinions, reach on out to us. We have some emails. We have a email, just one email. backtotheframerate@gmail.com. You can connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, or TikTok. Our handle is backtotheframerate, or on Twitter, which is backframerate. We would also be grateful if you took a moment and left us a rating and review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Also, I'd like to mention before we end things is thank you to amazing actor Brian Ellsworth for lending his vocal talents to the opening of our show. We look forward to having him introduce our show going forward. So thank you very much. Our newsletter, I think, dropped today for February, which I'm really excited about. I worked really hard over the past couple of weeks on this fun comic strip.
You guys have to check out the newsletter, because it's sick.
I dabbled in Canva, and I created a comic strip that explains our plight as we built our fall shelter. It's really cool. So
to say about that, though. The cartoons don't look like anything like us.
Well, you know, it's what can I say? I did the best I could.
Wait a minute, there's a cartoon likeness of me in this lawsuit.
Nobody looks like us. But. So that's called Frame Rate Monthly, and you can subscribe right now basically by emailing us at backtotheframerate@gmail.com until we have a better way.
Do it.
And the most important thing, if you're out there listening to us, if you love our show, please tell a friend, tell your family, tell your boss, tell your wife, your girlfriend,
tell your dog,
tell your enemies, and share our episodes. Tell everyone, tell the world about us, so that everyone knows, because that's what we need.
Tell
we
them
need,
in Spanish too.
Sure, tell them in Spanish. We don't care. Swahili, yeah. French, we don't care. Oh, I didn't actually remind people what we're going to watch next week. Next week, we're going to do The Revenant.
Yeah.
From 2015, yeah. Which I'm really excited about. I've seen it one time. Yeah, so this will be the...
Ellie, you're going to need a big old pot of coffee for this
one. Oh, my goodness. I love that movie.
No plane crashes. I actually had to double check. It's like, do they get stranded by a plane crash? No, they're just frontiersmen, right? They're just out
there. No planes at that time, I don't think. Yeah.
If a wormhole portal opened in the sky and a plane from the 20th century crashed into the 1800s or something.
And we promise eventually we will have movies with women in it at some point. It could be a few more weeks, but
let's be honest, Peter Griffin here, I mean, could a chick really survive a plane crash?
March Madness is coming. So
that was a joke.
That sounds hard.
Joke.
All right. I've completely derailed my sign off. So hey, here we are. All right, so what did I say? So
bye everyone.
Head over to Apple Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, whichever portal connects you to our broadcast, and share your thoughts until we emerge from the fallout shelter. Stay with us, keep hope alive, and keep those reviews coming. This is the end of our transmission.
And as to Pitney Bowes, you're the worst company ever.
Back to the frame rate.
Have faith.
Signing off.
I want you to know it's over.